It's kind of interesting, or maybe even ironic, that Srila Prabhupada had put together so many literatures on transcendental knowledge and related topics that connect with transcendental knowledge. And then the books that have been written about Srila Prabhupada are also voluminous. So the books he wrote and the books that are about him comprise many, many hundreds of books. It's amazing how much he influenced people's lives in a very powerful and a very, what we say, wonderful way. I'm going to read my offering that I wrote in honor of Srila Prabhupada as part of the offerings that were collected. Om Gyan Timirandasya Gyanajana Savakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of his ignorance, and my spiritual master, his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, my eternal spiritual guide, and the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Dear Srila Prabhupada, you have often told your disciples that reading your books is the best way of knowing you. Quote by Prabhupada, if you want to know me, read my books. I may come or go, but in my books I will live forever. The more you distribute books, history will change. Whatever I wanted to say, I have said in my books. Unquote. During the recent lockdown due to the pandemic, reading Srimad Bhagavatam was a daily affair that I could finally dedicate ample time to. I read more and absorbed more, appreciating how much time and energy you spent and how many sacrifices you endured to give us, your devotees, and the whole world the knowledge of Lord Sri Krishna and the practice of pure devotional service. Srila Prabhupada's quote, if you are strong in your position by reading books, Vedic literature, then you become very, very favorite of Krishna. That was an arrival address by Srila Prabhupada. You gave the world Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through your words and through your pure love for him. And your books, especially Srimad Bhagavatam, contain the essence of transcendental knowledge, made sweeter and more understandable and applicable by your Bhaktivedanta purports. Many lifetimes of knowledge yet to be revealed and to be relished. And then another statement. This is from the Bhagavad Gita. One who acts in devotional service, renouncing the fruits of actions, and whose doubts have been destroyed by transcendental knowledge, is situated factually in self, in the self. Thus, that person is not bound by the reactions of work. O conqueror of riches, therefore the doubts which have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapons of knowledge. Armed with yoga, O Bart, stand and fight. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, your humble servant Chandramali Swami. And now they include our initiation date in these.
Really?
Initiated in 1973, September 5th, New Vrindavan, West Virginia.
Jai! New Vrindavan Gita.
New Vrindavan is New Vrindavan. So, as we mentioned at the very beginning, so much has been written about Prabhupada and so much is written by Prabhupada. And Prabhupada makes that point in here that if you want to know me, read my books. Sometimes there are types of controversies that sort of spring up because apparently Prabhupada said one thing in one situation and then he said something that is apparently contradictory in another. And because of that, there's a lot of what we say polemics or various types of discussions of what does Prabhupada really mean. But here is the answer that Prabhupada gave us ahead of time so we could avoid all of these confusions. If you want to know anything about me, it's in my books. My lectures may apply to certain situations, certain personalities, and his letters also. Of course, his lectures are more, what we say, direct than his letters. The letters are individual. But his books are solid. In other words, if you wanted to know Prabhupada, read and study his books, because he put everything he wanted us to understand in the practice of Krishna consciousness in his books. But I'm sorry to say, and this is not something that I'm coming up with, this is something I hear constantly from the leaders of our movement, the devotees don't read. They just don't read. For whatever reason, I don't know, we could speculate on the reasons. And there probably are some apparently valid reasons that people will present. But ultimately, if you want to know Prabhupada and you want to know how to execute devotional service, here is the answer. Everything is in Prabhupada's books. It's a lifetime of study. Srimad Bhagavatam alone cannot be understood in one lifetime. It's just not possible. When Prabhupada was on the morning walk with one very wonderful professor, his name was Professor Durkheim from Germany. They were discussing, you know, the sources of knowledge. And Prabhupada at one point turned to the Srimad Bhagavatam and he said, and everything is in Srimad Bhagavatam. And there are 18,000 verses in the Bhagavatam. And it takes 1 month to understand each verse. And then he immediately turns to his disciples and he said, how long is that? One devotee was quite quick. He said, that's 1,500 years. Prabhupada said, you have enough to read. That was Prabhupada's point. Is that we can't even exhaust one of the texts that he gave us. Bhagavad Gita falls into the same category. Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's an ocean of transcendental knowledge and an ocean of transcendental nectar that comes from this philosophical teachings, because as we read from that one verse in the Krishna speaks that verse to Arjuna and he's saying, be situated in transcendental knowledge. And that way you'll be free from all of the dualities in material life. When you understand this process through transcendental knowledge, then whatever comes your way, you have the understanding of how to deal with it. You understand why it's coming, you understand how it's coming, and you understand how to deal with it in a spiritual way, or in the best possible way, we might also say. So that is the benefit of this. That's one of the benefits. The other benefit is that we learn so much about Krishna. Everything is in Prabhupada's books, all about Krishna. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada used that statement, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, 8,000 times. He has said that statement 8,000 times, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He wanted to make that point with emphasis, and hopefully that emphasis will help bring about a sense of clarity. And what is that? That Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's not only the source of all of the other manifestations of Godhead, but he is a person. And that's important to understand, because we can only have a relationship with another person because we are personal. We cannot have a relationship with something that is impersonal or inanimate. We have a relation, just like in this world, we develop relationships with other people. And that is natural, that is human, and that goes on as life. But on the spiritual platform, that same relationship, at least the essence of that connection, is based on our personal relationship with Krishna. And as Srila Prabhupada said, each and every one of you has a unique, and I use that word with emphasis, unique personal relationship with God, unlike any other living soul. And that's one of the reasons why Krishna wants to have a relationship with each and every one of us. Why? Because each one has a certain element that is unique about that soul that's different from all other souls. Although we all are individual souls, we all are connected with Krishna, we all have general characteristics that are the same. There's certain elements of our quality of a relationship that's unique to each and individual. And Krishna wants to taste that. And that's why he wants to have exchanged love with everyone, because he wants to taste that uniqueness of each of the living entities, which are his parts and parcels, of course. So Prabhupada, what he did in just 11 years, from 1966 to 1977, is unmatched in the history of any great personality who came to spread spiritual knowledge. The time period and the conditions that Prabhupada came in, that was amazing what Prabhupada did. I mean, amazing is not a word that really fits. It's unbelievable. It's undefinable. And what is that? Is that 70 years old? I mean, think about it. I mean, how many of you are 70 or more here? Okay, just the front lines here. Okay. Really?
72.
Right. See what happens when you get older, you can even dance faster. If you don't believe me, just watch him. And one very prominent person in the Hungarian government, he was interacting with the devotees. And when he learned a little bit about Prabhupada and how Prabhupada began his mission at the age of 70, he was amazed. And he was telling the devotees, you don't know. Your teacher, he's done something that nobody can do. He began a worldwide movement when we all are about to retire or have retired. In other words, he was shocked in a sense of happiness to see this personality. Look what he did at the age of 70. And for those 11 years, from 70 to 81, Prabhupada traveled the world 14 times, opened up 108 temples. Now we have much more than that. You know, inspired devotees to go around the world and open up preaching centers, restaurants, farm communities, started Gurukulas, and many other projects. Prabhupada was tireless. He was like a young man, although he was in his age, he was like, you know, old, you could say, retirement time. And the devotees, they will also say, when they were with Prabhupada, we can't keep up with Prabhupada. Can't keep up with him. They would travel with Prabhupada from place to place, and then as soon as they get to the place, they take rest. Prabhupada said, "You're young. Why are you doing that?" You know. Prabhupada would just pick up his schedule. He had a very tight schedule, which was very regulated, and wherever he would land, according to the time of the place that he landed in, that's where he would start his day. You know, he followed his schedule like what does it call it, clockwork? Like, amazing how he, and nobody could do that. But then again, we learn a little bit more about who Srila Prabhupada is. I mean, obviously he's not a person of this world. And Prabhupada also said that, and I heard it directly from one person who heard it directly from Prabhupada. And his name was Bhavananda. He was Bhavananda Maharaj at the time. No, actually, he was just Bhavananda. Later, he became Maharaj. But he was with Prabhupada, and he was just the two of them. And when Prabhupada was with anyone, he would always talk about Krishna or about spreading Krishna consciousness or something interesting that was related to Krishna, something. That was Prabhupada. He couldn't keep quiet. He would always be preaching something. And so, but this particular time it was quite quiet. And then that was unusual. And then all of a sudden Prabhupada broke the silence. And he said, I was with Krishna in the spiritual world. And he said, go to the material world. And I said, material world? Horrible place. Horrible place. And Krishna said to me, no, you go. You write some books, I'll protect you. So I came. So Prabhupada just said that. And when we heard that, we were thinking, my God. And you might think, how is it possible that Prabhupada could remember his relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world? Because he was never separated from Krishna. To give you a kind of a material example of the power of Srila Prabhupada's mind. And he mentions this a couple of times in different lectures. I'm sure Maharaj heard it. Prabhupada said, when I was 6 months old, I was sitting on the lap of my auntie and she was knitting. And I can still remember being there. In other words, still... He could remember when he was 6 months old sitting on the lap of his auntie and she was doing some knitting. I can't even remember when I was 20. I can't even remember if I was 20 or not. So, 6 months old, still remembering an incident at that time of age. That is a Srila Prabhupada's mental power. It was amazing. And everything that Prabhupada said that was not happening at that time actually came true. Prabhupada gave us so many things that he said would happen in the future, and one by one, everything would happen. There was one example. I was in London one time, and I was giving a class to a new group of people I had never met before, first time. And it was quite a large group. And there were many people of the Indian Orange in there. And there was one gentleman, right after my lecture, he came up to me and said, he was about, 70 years old. He said, I met your spiritual master when I was a young man going to college. He said, I had heard that this spiritual person was coming. And I had read some flyers and I decided, let me go. So I came, and there he was, and I sat way in the back. And I was thinking, when he was speaking, I was thinking, I'm going to college, and I'm going to ask him to bless me to get good grades in my college. And so that was at the beginning. And then he listened to Prabhupada's whole talk, and then he changed his mind. He said I couldn't ask him. So I got up and started to leave. And then I saw your teacher, Prabhupada, he was going like this, because in India this is the way they call you, It's not like goodbye. It means come, Right? Yeah, you go like this, it means come here. And Prabhupada's going like this. So he goes over to Prabhupada, and he's very respectful, he pays his obeisances. Prabhupada said, you're a student? Yes. You're going to university? Yes. You have four subjects? Yes. I bless you to get good marks in all four subjects and come back and become a life member in our society. How did Prabhupada know that? He even knew how many subjects he had. And so we're not dealing with a person or not, working underneath a person who is part of this world. The Prabhupada is amazing. These are just little incidents of his outstanding qualities. It's really his outstanding qualities that he said that I have made hippies into happies. I was referring to us. One time when he was sitting with a group of devotees and there were some guests there, one guest asked Prabhupada, can you show us some mystic power? And Prabhupada pointed at his disciples, this is my mystic power. They were all, you know, meat eaters and woman mongers and drug addicts. Now they've given all that up and they're chanting Hare Krishna and they're happy. He said, this is my power. I made hippies into happies. And that's not a small thing. To change a person's life towards Krishna is a great achievement. And one has to be empowered to do that. It's not an easy thing. Now, these are some things. And I'll tell another story of Prabhupada's life, which you probably all heard, which is also quite amazing. When Prabhupada began his movement in New York in 26th Second Avenue, even before he actually established himself there, one time he was in Central Park in New York and he was sitting on a park bench. And one train conductor from Iran, he came and he was just happened to be there and he saw this interesting gentleman sitting on the park bench. And so he thought, all right, let me go over and find out. So he sat on the same bench with Prabhupada and then, being very curious, he asked, well, who are you? Where are you coming from? And Prabhupada said, well, I'm coming from India and I have a mission. I am a representative of my spiritual teacher. So many things Prabhupada said. And he said, I have come to establish the temples of Krishna. And I have 108 temples, but they're all separated by time. He told. And now this train conductor, he was thinking, he's such a nice person, but he's talking quite crazily. He has 108 temples, and he doesn't have them yet, but he has them. So I eventually, you know, the conversation ended. And it's interesting because I received a letter back in the 1990s from one person who was in jail. And he said, Maharaj, this is amazing. He said, I was in the Seattle temple and this same train conductor who met Prabhupada in New York, he came into the temple one night and he walked right up to Prabhupada and started speaking in a very emotional way. And he was saying, he said he would do it. I didn't believe it. He did it. Same train conductor. Krishna made it arrange for that train conductor to get that answer in a very real way. Amazing. So these are some of the incidents of Srila Prabhupada's life that are... But one of the most important things that I'd like to emphasize is that Prabhupada left us a legacy. When you come into this movement, there's a type of responsibility that comes along with being that. And that is to help expand Prabhupada's mission. He wanted each and every one of us to somehow or other be a part of bringing Krishna consciousness to the world in some way or other. And Prabhupada had so many programs that he instituted to do that. But one of the things that he said in a very futuristic way, he said that these cities that you live in will not last. There's a video, Prabhupada said, in 1973, he said the whole Western world will collapse in 50 years and it'll be chaos. So 1973 and 50 is what? 2023. Hare Krishna. And he said, but we need to establish our movement in such a way that we can continue, and therefore we cannot depend on this materialistic society. We have to establish these farm communities. He said, grow your own food. Make your own cloth, learn herbs so you can make medicine, build your own homes, keep cows, live in a very simplified atmosphere. He says, especially for those in family life, this will be a necessity in order for them to maintain their family and everything connected with the family life. But Prabhupada said, before he left, he said, 50% of my mission is still incomplete. I wanted to establish these farm communities and develop Vanashram Dharma based on, you know, the teachings of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. And so he said, he wanted us to take that next step for him and develop these, because he strongly understood that, you know, might find it difficult to continue to preach or even to live as this Western society starts to crumble. And it is crumbling. I'm not a futuristic doomsday prophet, but I'm simply just making the same statements that Srila Prabhupada made years ago. And there's videos of that. He said, any society that's based on money is a false society. A society has to be based on culture. We have the culture. It's the Vedic culture. It's a spiritual culture. It's also a human culture. The Western world simply lives on economic arrangements. If the economy is going good, everyone is somewhat falsely happy. But if things start to, you know, crumble, they have nothing to fall back on. Everything and their whole lifestyle is, what we say, destroyed, because they depend on economics for everything. And Prabhupada said that's a false way of living. We have to establish these farm communities based on Vedic culture, live like Krishna lived. So Prabhupada was very strong on that, and he made many, 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 many statements in that regard. In fact, to illustrate how important Prabhupada felt about that, in September 1977, Prabhupada, he was feeling quite sick at the time. So he said, before I leave my body, I want to go to Gita Nagari and show how to live on the land. I will do it personally. So he made a last attempt to show what he wanted to establish. He said, I'm going to teach it directly. Got on a plane, went to London. When he was in London, he stayed there for a little while, and his health started to deteriorate more and more and more. He was unable to go on to Gita Nagari, so he went back to Vrindavan. And then, of course, just about a month or so later, he departed. But Prabhupada emphasizes how important it was to establish these communities based on simple living and Krishna consciousness. So we have a great responsibility to learn what Prabhupada wanted for us, to put that into practice in a daily way, and at the same time give Krishna consciousness to others. That is our mission. It's given to us. It's a legacy of spreading Krishna consciousness around the world. Lord Chaitanya said, every town and village, my name will be chanted. What does that mean? That everywhere, and you know who's doing it? Lord Jagannath. He's going to every town and village doing his Rath Yatra practically all around the world, just to pave the way for Lord Chaitanya's movement. So we have a great responsibility. So read Prabhupada's books. Take some time. To read means to schedule. Paladananda Maharaj is the pinnacle, or we can say the ideal example of a person who takes Prabhupada's books seriously. I'll say one little thing. I know time is short. We were at an ILS meeting in Mayapur. ILS means ISKCON Leadership Sangha. And they decided to do a survey during the Sangha meeting. And there was about 259 members there. These are people who are leaders all around the world in different positions. Temple presidents, sannyasis, gurus, regional secretaries. And they had a listing of all of the Prabhupada's books. And they asked us to fill out this little form, how many times you've read each one of these books. And then after they got all of them, they calculated together, and then they divided it by the number of people. And the result was that
Now, not even one time, less than once, people read Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhagavad Gita, hardly one or two times. Srimad Bhagavatam, even the leaders don't read. That's why we don't read. And then, of course, they came to Prahladananda Maharaj's listing. He read Bhagavad Gita 130 times. And so he's a wonderful example of understanding the importance and studying Srila Prabhupada's books. So you have that, you have that leadership right here. So we should follow that and make, especially now, we need to read and study, because that fixes the mind on Krishna, and it also helps you to understand how to execute Krishna consciousness nicely and effectively. And what Prabhupada said, preacher means reader. The more you read, the more you're inspired to speak Krishna consciousness. That is a fact. That's an automatic, calculation. So Prabhupada gave us so much, left us so much, and we are all extremely fortunate, because what he really gave us is to get out of this material world and go back home, back to Krishna. And that cannot be matched by anyone. The eternal life, the gift of eternal life has been given to us by Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chandramali Maharaj. I'll try to say something useful by Prabhupada and Krishna's mercy, with your blessings too. So, as far as what Chandramali Maharaj said about reading books, well, I guess if I actually read the book, well, the books are such, Nitya Nava 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 Yavana, which means that the more you go on reading, the more you become enlightened, that there's no limit to reading books. And Bhagavad Gita is especially important, because without understanding Bhagavad Gita, it's practically impossible to understand any of the other books. Bhagavad Gita helps us get out of the material world, out of material consciousness, and when we're in spiritual consciousness, then we can understand what Krishna's activities are, both in the external energy as well as in the internal energy. So one thing that's important is that we're obliged, or at least expected in our society, to concentrate on Srila Prabhupada's books. Now, since I've been in the movement, and even now, it's impossible to say exactly what everyone's thinking, of course, or how, for instance, on a subject like how do the devotees in general perceive Srila Prabhupada. But from my little experience, is that we can't expect the devotees to understand, myself including, to actually understand who actually is Srila Prabhupada and what was his activities. But I'll explain a little bit here, because in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it says, Yanya Chite Krishna Prema Karye Udai Tandra Vakya Kriya Mudra Vigeha Na Bujaya. Even though the most learned man cannot understand the words, activities, and symptoms of a person situated in love of God. In other words, as they say in English, I don't know if they say it here, it takes one to know one. Without being on that platform of Krishna consciousness, actually being aware of Krishna, then it's not possible to understand what the activities of a person who is on that platform. As Chandramali Maharaj pointed out, for instance, the Prabhupada, if we go through the conversations books, we'll find that there are many different, there are times where Prabhupada seemingly said something different according to his audience, because Prabhupada was not necessarily interested in putting forward any particular fact about the material nature or any particular opinion about the material nature. he was more interested in getting people to understand how to work in the material nature in order to become conscious of Krishna. And if they didn't listen to him, if he got into an argument with them, then it was very unlikely they were going to accept anything else he said. So Prabhupada would sometimes say something about black people, sometimes he'd say something about the different political parties to fit the audience, and then he'd say something completely different with a different audience. But his idea was always the same, to somehow or another get people to understand Krishna and the relationship with him, and not to get into a fight with Krishna's pure representative over insignificant or facts or situations that may have different perspectives on it. Indeed, everyone in the material world, it says in Bhagavad Gita, Satvasti rupam sarvasya shadadbhavati bharata sharomau yoyo purusham yoyat charase evasaha. According to one's situation under the modes of material nature, one has a particular kind of fate. So we see everything according to the modes of nature we're situated under. It's not that we don't see some part of reality, but our reality is something like the learned people who go and try to understand what an elephant is, blind people trying to understand the elephant. One takes his trunk, one takes his leg, one takes his tail, and says, I've understood the elephant by practical experience. But all they're doing is seeing a little part of the elephant. They don't understand the actual elephant itself. Therefore, in preaching, we're going to come in contact with so many different people who have so many different opinions on so many different issues. For instance, if we want to distribute books, it is a very... it's not suggested, from my experience, to get into arguments with people on the street. Sometimes it's very attractive. Some Christian comes, and I don't know about here whether they're so fanatic, but in America you can go to places where you have fanatic Christians, and as soon as you appear, they come out of the woodwork, so to speak. They come out of nowhere to harass you, saying you're the devil and Jesus is the only way. And if you try to, even if you try to argue on the basis of the Bible, if you defeat their arguments, they'll become even angrier at you. They will say, oh, very nice argument. Yes, I surrender. What is that mantra you're chanting? No, they'll start screaming at you. They'll get others to scream at you. So it's not very desirable. As a matter of fact, if you argue with someone on the street when you want to distribute a book, then they'll argue one point of view, and then 5 minutes later, they'll, in the same adamant way, they'll argue a completely different point of view, because they can't even remember what point of view they argued 5 minutes ago. So the best thing to do is book distribution, best distribute the book and get a donation, and if they want to argue, give them a card, tell it here. I love arguing, come to our temple, I can argue with you there. We'll see you later. Thank you very much for your association. In any case, Prabhupada knew perfectly how to deal with different people under different circumstances. And generally, from my experience of watching Prabhupada, I mean, you could read it in the conversations, Prabhupada didn't get into, I mean, sometimes he'd get into conversations with people and try to establish some kind of rapport with them. Like there was one racetrack driver who was introduced to Prabhupada in England, and Prabhupada started to talk about cars to him before he got into talking about Krishna consciousness. Whereas Prabhupada, one time I had the fortune of meeting Prabhupada at the airport with the devotees, and I got to walk with Srila Prabhupada carrying the umbrella over him. And I was walking pretty fast, and Prabhupada was like gliding. He was going faster than everyone. The young people were running, and Prabhupada just gliding. And then the reporter asked, you know, how did you come here? And Prabhupada said, by plane. And Prabhupada said, there are three types of ways of coming, of traveling. One is you strap pigeons together. And then you just fly with the pigeons. And the other one is by mystic power. You just, you know, there are yogis with mystic power. And the other is we travel on these yantras, on these airplanes. So the reporter said, so how did you get here? He said, I came by plane just to be one with you. But these different points of view, sometimes, well, to, without, I just want to go into the point that, although I've read the Bhagavad Gita a number of times, still, you know, I was reading the Bhagavad Gita today because what I do sometimes, rarely I prepare for classes, but when I do prepare for a class, then I get different ideas, and then I look them up. So I looked up this idea. I had this idea that Prabhupada, he's not necessarily accepted, nor can he be accepted blindly. And at the present situation, when we're not fully conscious of Krishna, means we won't be fully conscious of Śrīla Prabhupāda also. And therefore, I remembered Prabhupāda, the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupāda said that we have to accept Krishna theoretically, at least on faith. And then I was thinking that actually we also have to accept Śrīla Prabhupāda also theoretically on faith, just as you have to accept everyone theoretically on faith. Because as long as we're not fully Krishna conscious, we're not conscious of anything. Not fully, at least. And therefore, so much emphasis, for instance, we're sitting on chairs. The idea is of sitting in a chair. I mean, we may be old, but we don't necessarily have to sit on a chair. It's not that there's more oxygen up here and therefore we need it. The idea is to establish some kind of faith that this person, he might have something interesting to tell us. Therefore, he has the position, he can sit on a chair. Yes, we're a chairman. Now, the idea is to establish some kind of faith. Therefore, for instance, there's a Vedic etiquette, and the senior devotee, the spiritual master sits on a Vyasasana for a Vyasadeva, etc. All to give us some kind of faith, but our faith is not developed simply by the externals. It has to lead to something so that we can actually get realization. All the faith that we develop in someone, spiritually speaking, is only so valuable it actually inspires us to actually do something practically by following the instructions. Just like one can read, if one doesn't read Prabhupada's books, still one can have faith in Prabhupada and follow his instructions. But as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 10, verse number 10, that even if one has a bona fide spiritual master and is part of a bona fide spiritual organization, still he may not take advantage of them. But still, if he has, he accepts all kinds of services with love, then Krishna from within will help him advance in Krishna consciousness. So reading is very important, but if we read and we don't try to assimilate the knowledge and put it into practice so that we gain, Krishna is merciful, because Krishna consciousness depends upon revelation, doesn't depend upon our personal expertise, depends upon our sincerity, that Krishna sees we're sincere. Sincerity means we follow what Krishna wants us to do. And then Krishna from within, he enlightens us and gives us realization and bliss, because bliss and enlightenment go together. When we're in ecstasy, then we can understand that during that time, then that ecstasy is burning away some of the coverings of our consciousness. And so after the ecstasy stops, still we'll be able to see things more clearly. And when we see things more clearly, then we can act hopefully more sincerely, and therefore we become more eligible to obtain Krishna's mercy. But at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, I was struck that Prabhupada, he goes from the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, the introduction, he's trying to explain to us, or he does explain to us, how he met a lady, and the lady was, you know, an English lady. She was interested, can you recommend a edition of the Bhagavad Gita to Prabhupada? And Prabhupada said, no, I'm sorry. Can't recommend any edition of the Bhagavad Gita. He said, because all these Bhagavad Gita, these editions, the commentator puts in their own opinion. So therefore, Prabhupada wanted to write Bhagavad Gita as it is. But to write Bhagavad Gita as it is means that Prabhupada had to be a transparent medium for Krishna. He wasn't putting in his own opinion. And then Prabhupada says that if you want to take medicine, then you have to follow the directions on the label and by the expert doctor. You can't just take medicine according to your own whim. So if we read Bhagavad Gita, there's a certain way we have to read Bhagavad Gita, and it should be, as Prabhupada said, it should be accepted by the speaker itself, not with whimsical interpretation. Now, we don't, sometimes we're not even aware of how our minds are tricking us when we're hearing. For instance, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, he speaks from different incarnations. It's not only Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, speaking. When he talks about creation, he's talking about the Purusha avatars, and they're creating. That the Purusha avatars are speaking through him. Similarly, Bhagavad Gita can only be understood if we accept that Krishna is ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Bhagavad Gita is meant to, by different points of view, meant to convince us that he actually is who he says he is. But that conviction is only obtained when we actually have experience. That experience is only obtained when we actually understand what Krishna says and follow it to the best of our ability, and therefore Krishna gives us some mercy, and then it becomes a little clearer. So this is the medicine that we're taking, reading Bhagavad Gita, hearing from the Krishna's representatives, but we have to take it according to the directions that Krishna has given, and we're trying to be convinced that Krishna is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As the Acharyas have said, as great personalities like Narada and Vyas and Asita. Now, we don't know Vyasadeva. I never met him. I never met Asita. I never met Narada Muni. Even he's here, right here, but even though I speak to him sometimes, he never answers. He just smiles. So I can't say I have the most intimate relationship with him, but at least we're trying to get some relationship. He's right there. Shiva Sakur. He looks a little different. Not that we can see. You have to come here early in the morning before anyone wakes up. So, I don't know Asita, I don't know Narada Muni, I don't know any of them. But then again, I don't even know the president of, if there's, you know, of Slovenia. But I accept he exists, because everyone else is telling me he exists. Or I've never met George Washington. And probably none of us met George Washington. Not in this lifetime. But still we accept, because we hear from, quote, authorities that he existed. It's in our scripture, the history of America. Etc. So at least, as Prabhupada, he concludes, we have to accept at least, if we want to get the value from reading Bhagavad Gita, at least theoretically we have to accept that Krishna is who he speaks he is. And that's called submissive hearing. It is not that we have to blindly accept, I'm a Hare Krishna, I accept Krishna as God, etc. You know, why? I don't know, but you know, I know he's God, and I'll defend it almost to my death. We'll see if we defend it to our death. No, we have submissive spirit means that we have to at least theoretically accept that Krishna is God. Similarly, we have to at least theoretically accept that Prabhupada is who he said he was. Now, who did Prabhupada say he was? He said that he was a... Well, actually... No, I'm not talking about that. I don't even know if I have it in here. Well, I'll get to that in a few minutes. One time, Brahmananda Prabhu, that he said that, actually, I can't fall. The difference between you and me is that I can't fall down, but you can. Now, I personally never heard Prabhupada talk about his position on the spiritual platform that I can remember. I mean, personally. But it doesn't really matter. The point is that Prabhupada described what an Uttama Adhikari is, what the qualifications of a Shaktivesh avatar is, what the qualifications of a Nitya Siddha are, a Sampradaya Acharya, and then it's up to us to decide whether or not we think Prabhupada fits the bill. Whether or not we're actually, by following Krishna consciousness, we're actually getting the result that Prabhupada said we're going to get. Whether or not someone who actually at the age of 70, as Chandamani Maharaj pointed out, went around the world and established in all different cultures, at least began Krishna consciousness, in all different cultures, amongst a whole variety of different people, of creeds, culture, caste, color, etc., whether that was not, quite an achievement. Whether writing 80 books at that age, at the same time doing that, establishing temples, establishing farm communities, whether that's not extraordinary. But then again, if we really want to understand who Prabhupada was, as Chandramani Maharaj pointed out, then we have to read his books. Why? How will that help us understand? Because we'll see that whatever Prabhupada was saying was actually none different from Krishna. Never mind all these details about whether the earth is round or the earth is flat. Prabhupada sometimes said it was flat, sometimes he said it was round. Sometimes he said we went to the moon, sometimes he said we went to Rahu, sometimes he said we went to Arizona.
Somebody asked him, is the world flat? He said, everywhere I walk, it's flat.
Never mind all these, but the actual essence of faith in the words of Krishna, that if we chant Hare Krishna with faith and attention, then Krishna will reciprocate with us because he is in our heart. Because we're eternal, because Krishna is in our heart, and because this world is controlled by a person. And if we act like that, then Krishna will reciprocate with us. So if we have that much faith and we apply it, if we read Prabhupada's books, he helps us to apply it. He gives us what Krishna is saying, he tries to make it relevant to us so that we can have some idea of how we could practically apply it within our own lives. And as Chandramani Maharaj said, if we know nothing else, then at least we should understand that if we engage our energies in the Sankirtan movement, as Prabhupada once wrote to me, he said, if the more you work seriously to help Lord Krishna bring his other children back to the spiritual kingdom, then the more he'll bestow all his blessings upon you. That Krishna, he's never ungrateful for efforts to serve him, rest assured. So that applies to all of us. It's not that Krishna wants one person to go back to the spiritual world because it's overcrowded already. Therefore, it's a competition of who can get there first because it's a limited seating. No, everyone's invited. It's an unlimited world, and the more, the happier, the merrier. So, now when I first joined the movement, because in one sense, I hear all the time, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, and then I see that sometimes Jai Prabhupada, but not everyone is actually believes in Prabhupada, believes what he's talking about. I've heard, there's opinions even nowadays, when Prabhupada quotes from the scripture, then he's absolute what he says. But sometimes when he doesn't quote from the scripture and he talks about worldly things, like whether we went to the moon or whether the earth is flat, then he's just giving his mundane opinion on things because he doesn't really know. And this is from very, you know, advanced devotees in our society. They have some doubts about Prabhupada's position, whether he was always on the transcendental platform, etc. So I was introduced to that. When I first came to the movement, no one knew about Prabhupada, what he was, but that's all we talked about. Basically speaking, because no one knew anything. And at least Prabhupada was the first person they probably met who was ever kind to them. So they used to talk about Prabhupada. And that's all we knew. We didn't have any books. I mean, we had Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatam, the first three cantos, the first canto in three parts, which was like written in a different style of English that most of us were used to. And I remember I was reading Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatam one time. I was in the temple. We only had five devotees, the six devotees living there. And my roommate, because we all lived in the same room, he walked in and saw me reading, and he started to yell at me, "Why are you reading? Why are you wasting your time reading these books?" Wasn't the atmosphere wasn't such that everyone was encouraged to read the books. In any case, devotees didn't understand so much. And then, as I said before, one time because we had one telephone in the temple, and it was used, you know, like once a month because we couldn't pay the bill. Telephone calls were quite expensive. And one time I lifted up there was a call, and I answered it, and I was talking to Pradumya, Purushottam, Prabhupada's secretary, and Purushottam said that Prabhupada wanted to speak to our Rupanuga, the temple president. So then I called Rupanuga and I stayed there because I was quite interested. What Prabhupada had to, you know, Prabhupada got on the telephone. The only time Prabhupada had ever, that I knew of, got on telephone was one time Prabhupada had a telephone. He asked for a telephone in 26th Second Avenue where he was living. And Prabhupada said, you know, could you get me a telephone? So they got Prabhupada a telephone 2 days later. I said, wow, 2 days later, that's amazing. He said, if you try to get a telephone in India and you pay a big bribe, you can get in, you know, like 6 months later. He said, wow, that's amazing. You know, 2 days, I got a telephone. And then he got the telephone, they connected it, and then probably the next day he said, take it out. The boy said, why? He said, last night, 12 o'clock, someone rings me up and says, Swamiji, is that you? And Prabhupada said, yes, it's me. He said, why are you calling me at 12 o'clock at night? He said, I just wanted to find out how you are. How are you? He said, you're calling me up 12 o'clock at night to tell me, ask me how I am? He said, so sorry, and he hung up. So next day, take it out. So Prabhupada got on, he was talking to Rupanuga Prabhu, and then when Rupanuga Prabhu got off, I asked Rupanuga, he said, what was he saying? He said Prabhupada was crying. He said, they're trying to take the movement over. He said, come to Los Angeles immediately. So I was all in the movement for maybe a year at that time, or a year and a half. This is Los Angeles scheme. So then Rupanuga left. That was the first time he became a president, temple president, much to the dismay of everyone else in the temple. Anyhow, it was a learning experience for everyone, including me. And he went there, and that was when they formed the GBC. Prabhupada gave the GBC. He created the GBC, called devotees, leaders from different parts of the world, and gave four devotees sannyas and sent them out. So later on, as the history goes, that finally, a little while after, these four sannyasis came to New Vrindavan. And I also, with Rupanuga, I went to New Vrindavan. And at New Vrindavan, these four sannyasis, they started to say, they had a class, I remember we had a class. My hero at that time was Vishnu Janmaraj. because he was a hero in ISKCON at that time. He was a very charismatic singer. And I always wanted to meet Vishnujamaraj, so I got my opportunity. And I met him in New Vrindavan. I started to talk to him, and he was talking all kinds of nonsense. I couldn't understand a word he was talking about. He was completely confused. And then we had a class. It was Janmasthami, by the way. And we had a class. And during the class, one of the sannyasis, I won't say who, stood up and said, actually, Prabhupada just left the movement. Everyone was shocked. He said he left because he didn't understand who he actually was. Because he didn't understand he was God. And I thought, what? Then one devotee got up and said, wait a second, Prabhupada never... Sat down! And, you know, it was like, there were sannyasis, you know, I was just a humble Brahma, less than humble Brahmacharya. And I didn't want to get a fight with the sannyasis. And Rupanuga just, you know, he didn't know what to say either. So he just took me out of there. We went back to Buffalo where we were. I was like, whew. It wasn't what I was expecting in Janmasthami. Prabhupada was God. He left the movement. He'd gone to Japan to preach, to start the movement around the world. And then the GBC at that time, they complained to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, just tell him to leave the movement. So they left. Our four sannyasis were invited to leave ISKCON. And then they traveled down. They went to Detroit, and they hitchhiked down to Coconut Grove in Florida, which is quite a bit from Detroit. And then Prabhupada at the same time, he wrote a letter to Rupanuga Prabhu asking me to open a temple. So I went, Rupanuga wrote a letter saying that I was going to get married, whether I should get married to some lady, and Prabhupada said, yeah, that's very good, you know, and then having them open the temple. Yeah. Obviously the marriage we got married by fire sacrifice, but I never found out her name, so it wasn't the most romantic. She was more romantic than I am. I was a little disappointing to her. I'd read Bhagavad Gita to her the few days we were together, and she'd fall asleep, and I thought, wow, this is not going to work out at all. We're obviously not compatible. Anyhow, she decided that she there are better opportunities, and she just left. So, at that time, I went down there, and I met the four sannyasis. And they were actually quite repentant. They said, actually, we didn't mean that Prabhupada was God. He was the servant acharya. He was servant God. Thank you. Yeah, it was interesting. Yes. And also the Shingaday prayers, by the way. Because my temple president at that time, traveling back, he got into a car accident, which extended my tenure as the temple president there, and the horror of the devotees in the temple. So that was the introduction that, you know, anyone could actually think that. I didn't know, I mean, I couldn't say that I had full realization of Prabhupada, but I was like, wow. And that was not the only incident. As time went on, doubts about Prabhupada's position were constantly reoccurring. Bhan Maharaj, Prabhupada's godbrother, came and was telling us that, and not me, I wasn't there, I never met Bhan Maharaj, but were telling some of the devotees that Prabhupada was just, you know, a scholar and a businessman, you know. Prabhupada's godbrothers were constantly attacking Prabhupada. And the reason why the devotees in the West Coast, the leaders there, wanted to remove Prabhupada from his position, believe it or not, was because they had heard from Prabhupada's godbrothers that Prabhupada was actually not bona fide. Because some of our devotees at that time in the movement, they were trying to avoid the draft, and they went to India. And there, they had no shelter, because there was no ISKCON in India. The only shelter was the Gaudiya Math. And the Gaudiya Math, Prabhupada, some of his Prabhupada's godbrothers, to the dismay of Prabhupada, were quite envious of Prabhupada. And they were saying that when Prabhupada got the name of Prabhupada, that it was unbona fide. That only Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada could have that name. And if Prabhupada took it, it means that he was a rascal. So they heard that and started to send letters to the leaders on the West Coast that actually Prabhupada was not actually bona fide. And therefore, they started to have doubts that maybe they should take the movement over and make it bona fide. So that it didn't stop there. I mean, how things went on was uncovered. Well, it was pretty obvious after Prabhupada left. Yes, that's right. After Prabhupada seemingly left, then we were in confusion. First of all, there are no tapes available what Prabhupada said for the last year and a half of Prabhupada's manifest appearance here. So we didn't really know what Prabhupada's final instructions are. We had to rely upon our leaders at that time, who were with Prabhupada. Now they themselves, obviously, they didn't, with all respect, most of them were the eldest devotee in the movement at that time. May have been like 20, 30 years old. He was considered the old man, ready for retirement. So they didn't understand. First of all, they were leaders, and they were very charismatic. They were the best of the leaders, practically most of them, in the movement. And they had their ideas. I mean, but we can't, and we have to understand that in 10 years of practicing Krishna consciousness, considering the backgrounds that we had, we weren't going to understand everything perfectly. Prabhupada did the best he could. So they came up with this idea, which you may have heard about, but you weren't there, that when Prabhupada left, he had appointed 11 of his disciples to become the next acharyas. And we had all kinds of, even amongst themselves, they disagreed. One of my best friends was one of those acharyas. And one day we were talking together, and he was saying that, "Isn't it amazing they made me an acharya? Now I have all mystic power." I said, "Really?" I didn't want to disagree with him because he was an acharya. And then we had, in Mayapur, we had 11 of Vyasasans in the temple, in Mayapur temple. And we offered each one of them flowers. And we had a special song to sing to them. And in the song it was saying that when all of them get together, Prabhupada is present. Yeah, I was thinking, wow. I was always thinking, Prabhupada, whatever I remember, Prabhupada, he's not really there. Only when these, anyhow, there was a lot of things going on. And it just so happens I happen to be, wherever there's a controversy in ISKCON, usually I'm there. I didn't say wherever I go there's a controversy. I'm just saying wherever there was a major controversy, somehow or another Krishna put me there. Luckily I'm here. Means there's probably no other big controversy going on in ISKCON right now. Yeah, I know. In any case, that idea that the Zalma Acharya system, and during that time, so many different, even now, so many biographies came out, etc., etc. And I read the biographies, and one of the major biographies, I went to him one time because I was in his zone, and I challenged him. I said, "This is not what happened." This is not because, sometimes I was there. I mean, I don't know what happened. Even when I'm in some place, I'm not sure what's happening exactly. But in any case, But in any case, you know, I read that particular book, and I said, this doesn't match up for my experience with Prabhupada. I said, this is, you know, in the book, for instance, in the biography, I think it was sincerely made, but things were said that, you know, I don't know where he got it from. And incidents happened, I don't know, you know, different from what I experienced directly. And the mood of Prabhupada, I was thinking it doesn't really match up with Prabhupada's mood. How can someone who's a nitya, you know, who's absorbed in Krishna consciousness, somehow or another become depressed sometimes, sometimes become confused, etc., etc.? I mean, sometimes Krishna, when Shalya, he had Krishna speak, was fighting against Shalya, and Shalya came and hit Krishna on the arm with the sharanga bow and knocked the sharanga bow off of Krishna, out of Krishna's hand. And Krishna appeared to be stunned, and all the demigods were aghast.
Also when he cut the head.
Yeah, I'll go into the whole thing. Well, I've got that much Krishna's giving me remembrance. So then Krishna, Shalya came back with the someone that seemed like his father, Vasudev. And he said, here is Vasudev, your father, who gave you birth, Krishna. Just see someone. And then he cut the Vasudev's head off. And Krishna appeared to be depressed, just like he appeared to be bewildered when the coward boys entered into the mouth of Agasura. He was amazed at the wonder of his energy. And apparently he was confused for a moment. But this is Krishna's pastimes. And thus Krishna showed something like that. First of all, the demons would never be able to criticize Krishna. And that's also necessary. Krishna disappeared by a hunter hitting him in the foot with an arrow, and then Krishna disappeared. So it says in the commentators said that way the demons could actually say, just see, Krishna claimed he was God, but he was killed by an arrow, by a hunter. But if we're going to write commentary about Prabhupada, we should not think that Prabhupada, apparently, even if he appeared to be angry sometimes, or even to someone's point of view, we had to accept that, as Mula Prakriti Mataji said, when she gave her interviews with Prabhupada's God brothers and people who know Prabhupada, it has to be assumed that a lot of them, they just came up with very interesting stories, we could say, about Prabhupada. Like one man said that when Prabhupada was going on the Jaladuta, that he was the only one who would accompany Prabhupada to the Jaladuta when it took off. He was there by himself and said Prabhupada goodbye and wished him luck. It was complete fabrication. I mean, people especially, you know, they have this idea. First of all, our memories are not so good, and we like to embellish and put ourselves a little bit more into the center of the story than we're actually with reality. Therefore, sometimes we have to read these stories with understanding, you know, that Prabhupada was, well, at least accept on faith that Prabhupada was not bewildered. He was not depressed. He did not get angry like an ordinary person did. And that he was always established deeply on the spiritual platform. And whatever he did as a perfect instrument for Krishna to help spread Krishna consciousness. Then we can actually understand a little bit about who Prabhupada was and what he was doing, and not try to take his position. Because when we bring Prabhupada down to our when we bring Prabhupada down to our level that of being an ordinary person who later on became a self-realized person, but at the beginning he went to college, and then he was joined the Gandhi movement, and he was absorbed in the Gandhi. All these things are just fabrications. First of all, Prabhupada never talked about it very much. Nor did Prabhupada ever, you know, become more interested in Gandhi's movement than in Krishna consciousness. It's just all mental conjecture. As Chandramali Maharaj said, that Prabhupada had mentioned that when he was 4 years old, he could remember. As Prabhupada said in another place, he said, there was never a time that I ever forgot Krishna. Not that he joined Gandhi's movement and became an ordinary householder. He didn't get along with his wife. These are all just, well, they're just interesting things that people put into the book to make it more interesting. Whether it's real or not, it has nothing to do with who Prabhupada actually was. So, as it says, one should not, as Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Instruction, one should not see a pure devotee from a materialistic point of view. That's my title. This is Nectar of Instruction, verse number 6. Krishna's devotee is not subjected to material conditions, even though his bodily features may appear merely materially conditioned. One should therefore not see a pure devotee from a materialistic point of view. Unless one is actually a devotee, he cannot see another devotee perfectly. As explained in the previous verse, there are three kinds of devotees: Kanista Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. The Kanista Adhikari cannot distinguish between a devotee and non-devotee. He is simply concerned with worshipping the deity in the temple. A Madhyama Adhikari, however, can distinguish between the devotee and non-devotee, as well as between the devotee and the Lord. Those who think that Krishna consciousness is limited to a certain section of people, certain section of devotees, or a certain tract of land are generally prone to see the external features of the devotee. Such devotees, neophytes, unable to appreciate the exalted service of the advanced devotee, try to bring the Mahabhagavata to their platform. We experience such difficulty in propagating this Krishna consciousness all over the world. Unfortunately, we are surrounded by neophyte godbrothers who do not appreciate the extraordinary activities of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. They simply try to bring us to their platform, and they try to criticize us in every respect. We very much regret their naive activities and poor fund of knowledge. An empowered person who is actually engaged in the confidential service of the Lord should not be treated as an ordinary human being, for it is stated that unless one is empowered by Krishna, one cannot spread the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. First time I went to India, as I think I've explained before, but I don't know if I've explained here, 1974 was the first temple president's meeting. And at that meeting, we were invited, did I mention this story before? We were invited to go to one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, Mats, to take prasadam. So we went there. There was probably 100 devotees assembled there for the first international Mayapur meeting. And we went there, and one of Prabhupada's godbrother's disciples gave a lecture. And I wasn't completely disturbed, I was bewildered. You know, why are we listening to this person, this devotee? Anyhow, we had to be respectful because they were going to give us prasadam. And he gave, I still remember the lecture. Sure. And he was explaining how Prabhupada actually, when he came to the West, but he didn't do anything very significant because he made a bunch of hippies and drug-addicted hippies into devotees. So I was like, I wasn't a drug-addicted hippie. What is he talking about? Anyhow, the prasadam I didn't like either. And we went back there, and Prabhupada's servant came to us later, the devotees, and he said Prabhupada heard about the lecture that was given, and he said, whoever heard this lecture has been spiritually scarred for life. And Prabhupada was, you know, that was one lecture. I mean, it wasn't the only incident of the disagreement between, or the presentation of Prabhupada's godbrothers, or later on after Prabhupada left, you're probably aware of the controversies with some of Prabhupada's godbrothers' disciples who were claiming that Prabhupada didn't give us everything, and that we had he was the new Mahabhagavat Acharya that we had to take shelter of, etc. So that practically almost caused a split in the society. What to speak of a spiritual scar for those who actually accepted such a philosophy. So it's not that it's so easy to accept, you know, first of all, to actually understand who Prabhupada is will actually mean that we'll actually take shelter of his books, we'll take shelter of instructions, we'll take shelter of his association with his devotees, we'll take shelter, especially those things, because we'll actually understand that this is the way we're actually going to get real shelter. Everything else is not, it will only be incomplete. There's no one else in this universe who's done what Prabhupada did. And there's no one else who's left of these books that can perfectly help us become Krishna conscious. Everything else will, at best, we'll have some doubt about. And maybe if we follow it, maybe we'll get some benefit, but we won't get the same benefit as we will be if we have faith in Prabhupada and Prabhupada's instructions and try to understand it with our intelligence, with the help of the super soul. Don't accept blindly, you know, because everyone else says, oh, this is very nice. I mean, these biographies, I read them, I think, you know, they're nice because they're sincere devotees, but you know, some of them were just like, you know, how could they possibly... I remember I was on a morning walk one time with Srila Prabhupada in Dallas, and one of my godbrothers was right next to Prabhupada. I was behind him. And the way he was treating Prabhupada, I was very, very disturbed. Because he was treating Prabhupada, you know, so familiarly. I mean, I wasn't so intimate with Prabhupada, and I definitely wasn't so familiar with him either. But that's what they were, that's who they were at, that's... Prabhupada's glory, part of his glory, is he took everyone he met, he tried to help them become Krishna conscious. And he did it in such a way is that he remained aloof from who they were, what they were doing, and he gave them the best medicine, the best opportunity they could get to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, generally speaking, Prabhupada was quite tolerant. And sometimes he appeared intolerant, as Navayovana Maharaj said. He was sitting with Prabhupada in Mayapur one time, and Prabhupada rang his bell, and the servant didn't come. So Prabhupada told Navayovana, go find out where the servant is, because there was always a servant to Prabhupada's door if he needed something, and acting as a guard. So he found him, and the devotee came back, and Prabhupada said, where were you? I can't imitate Prabhupada. Where were you? And the devotees start, I mean, with Prabhupada, he had such potency, the devotees start to shake. And Navayovana Maharaj start to shake also. And he said, you're supposed to be here. I mean, don't remember the exact words. You're supposed to be here. It's your duty to be here. And then the next moment, the devotee stood at the door, and Prabhupada started to talk to Navayogendra Maharaj. And he's completely calm and peaceful, as if nothing happened. So that's the potency of a pure devotee. He can act as a perfect instrument under all different circumstances in order to give people the maximum opportunity to become Krishna conscious. And we have to understand that in that light and not interpret Prabhupada as some kind of mundane, ordinary person subjected to the material emotions that we have. And that way we'll be able to take shelter of Prabhupada's instructions. And when we read his books, we should understand the super soul has arranged it. That when I open this book and I start reading it, it's actually the super soul, Prabhupada talking to us, and the super soul giving us the intelligence to understand what Prabhupada is saying. So we all have a very intimate relationship with Prabhupada if we want it. And by that intimate relationship, we can develop an intimate relationship with all our acharyas in disciple succession, and by that intimate relationship with the acharyas in succession, take shelter of the six Goswamis, the Panchatattva, and experience Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, wherever Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, he brought Vrindavan. And if we take shelter of our acharyas and disciples of succession and get the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in our heart, then wherever we go, there will be Vrindavan also. And that's what will spread. That's how we'll become Krishna conscious, and that's how we'll also spread Krishna consciousness to others. Thank you. Hare Krishna.